Welcome to another edition of the Booktown Blether podcast. And we're here again in New Chapter Books in Wigtown, Scotland's national book town. And we have a special guest this time. And I'm going to ask Anne to introduce herself, really. But it's Anne Barclay, who is the operational director of the Wigtown Festival Company. But Anne has been living in Wigtown her whole life, and I'm hoping she'll share with us a little bit about how the town has changed and what the designation of Booktown has brought to Wigtown and the changes it's made. And so first of all, I just want to welcome you, Anne, to Booktown Blether.
Thank you for having me, Jane. It's lovely to be here.
Yes. So, yes, take us back. You were born in Wigtown?
I was born in Wigtown in the mid-80s, and I remember the closure of Bladnoch Creamery and Bladnoch Distillery, which meant that once I was at school, a number of my classmates had to leave so that their parents could go and find jobs elsewhere. So I remember that time when the town really became much quieter and fell into really severe disrepair, which was what happened over much of the 80s and 90s, until this opportunity to pitch to become Scotland's National Book Town. And I was 11 when we became Scotland's National Book Town. I remember at primary school writing a letter as part of the bid in support of why we should be Scotland's National Book Town, and still spend lots of my life writing letters of support and making the case for why people should come to Scotland's National Book Town. But it was really so vital at that point when you could almost see the tumbleweed rolling down the street. You walked to school past buildings where the paint was flaking off them, windows were boarded up, shops were closed, properties were empty. And it was really, really quite a desperate time. You would never have been able to imagine back then the journey that I've gone through, being able to leave here, go away to university and come home again.
Yes. Because at one point the county buildings were being threatened with demolition, I believe.
That's right. They were being threatened with demolition. In fact, this came up in conversation just last week, that the community council at the time had been outside the county buildings weeding the pavement, and the following day slate started to fall off the roof in exactly the same place that they had been. It was in a really serious state of disrepair, and you know, I don't think that there would ever have been the investment that there was in that building had we not been successful in becoming Scotland's National Book Town.
And was that because the building itself just wasn't being used?
There just was. The building was...
It's got such history to it.
That's right. The building was being used. It was used for all sorts of events, for coffee mornings and soup lunches and for brownies and guides, youth groups. It was used for all sorts of different things, but there just wasn't the investment in its upkeep. And in fact, one of the stories I love most about the time when the judges came to Wigtown to review the application for coming Booktown, I only heard about 3 years ago from somebody who was involved in that process. And she said that the day they arrived, they went into what was the old courtroom, which is now the John McNeely Library in the county buildings. And every plug socket that could have a heater plugged into it did, but it was still so cold that they couldn't take their coats off. And at one point they had a break and they went out into the hall, and the mother and toddlers group was on upstairs in the hall. So there were parents who were carrying in toddlers, trying to walk them up the stairs because there was no lift in the building and no heating. And she said that that was a real turning point for the judges, because they just looked at that and said, this place really needs the investment. It really needs the opportunity to flourish. Seeing and experiencing that for themselves was one of the things that made them recommend that Wigtown was most likely to succeed as Scotland's National Book Town.
Yes. And, I, you know, as a bookseller in the town, I get quite a lot of people coming and asking, you know, why are there... Some people say, well, why are there so many bookshops? They kind of have obviously missed the signage. But then you get people who know it's the book town, but want to know a little bit about why it became Scotland's national book town. And you know better than me, I always give a kind of a little bit of a potted history. But perhaps you could explain that, because it's certainly a question we get asked a lot.
Do you mean the history of how we got here?
Yes, I mean, because it was an initiative, wasn't it, that was specifically to help a town that needed support, where the traditional industry had gone.
That's right. So Anthony Seaton from the University of Strathclyde came up with the concept of looking for a town in Scotland to be a book town equivalent to Hay-on-Wye in Wales, and put out an article in the newspaper to suggest that towns, you know, come together and apply for book town status. So Meetam Altman, who worked in Macker's Action at the time, saw the article in the paper and took it and floated it with a few others who formed a committee, and with the support of them and other organisations in the town, they put together the book town bid. And yet the judges came around each of the towns. Others who were in the running included Moffat and Gatehouse, obviously both also in Dumfries and Galloway. That's right. And as I say, the judges deemed that Wigtown would be most likely to be successful on the basis of the number of empty properties. So on the day that it was announced, there were 83 vacant properties on the market in Wigtown. And, you know, today, I don't even need the fingers on one hand to count how many there are. And the wide main street that would be suitable for putting up marquees for events. There was also the suggestion that authors could be flown into Bulldoon Airport, although I'm not aware that that's actually ever happened. I thought that was quite an entertaining suggestion. And yeah, the fact that the town really would benefit from the investment and the opportunity to develop it as a tourism initiative to bring people here. And, you know, it really has, over the last 25 years, it has worked. It's taken a lot of work by a lot of people to get it there. You know, every new bookseller who's come through the door, every volunteer on any of the book town company committees in the old days, to the festival company, our community council, so many people have had an input into making it a success. And yeah, we're really lucky that they had that vision.
Yes, because it could easily have gone somewhere else, but it definitely was needed here. I can remember I did a little bit of freelancing when I was in Dumfries, and I was asked to come through and spend a week covering events for the Galloway Gazette. And of course, I didn't know this area at all. Mm-hmm. But I can't actually remember how this happened. But anyway, it did. And I had the circus was here. It was down at the, where the rugby field is, there was a circus.
I don't remember that. No, it doesn't ring any bells.
You sure? Anyway, it was. I had to come out and cover a story, and I remember, you know, driving all the way through, you know, realizing how big Dumfries and Galloway is, because I'd been in Pennycook outside Edinburgh before that, and then I'd been in Dumfries, and you just don't realise just how much land there is.
No, that's right. 130 miles from one corner to the other.
That's right. And I can remember driving all the way through and having to come to Wigtown, and just, yeah, being struck. It was a lovely sunny day, and I can remember being struck by the architecture, the history that was obviously here. But that must have been before it got book town status, and just being struck by, yes, how many of the buildings were boarded up, and you could see there had been this amazing county town, and just wondering, you know, well, why has this happened?
Absolutely.
You know, and actually then we moved through here in 1999, so just after book town status had happened. So Yeah, I've kind of seen the changes.
Yeah, watched it evolve and grow.
Yes, yes. And yeah, it is. It's, I mean, it's such a difference, which is fantastic. And that's it. It's how much of a factor was the fact that there was a bookshop here, wasn't there? Because I think people found that quite a surprise that John Carter had the bookshop where Sean Biffle's bookshop is.
That's right.
He owned that originally, and that was there, wasn't it, when the bid was made?
It was. So John was obviously part of the process, which was really important, because otherwise that could have felt like a real, you know, we're bringing lots of other competitive businesses into town. But he was so supportive of the whole process. And actually, I think I'm right in saying that you can still see an interview with John from the 20th anniversary of Booktown on the Booktown website. But in addition, actually, also Tony and Rosemary Baker were also in business here at the time with their catalogue book business. So not with a shop front, but with a very, very successful catalogue business. And again, they were real driving forces behind the bid to become Booktown.
Right.
And so yeah, as I say, lots of people who have really done some immense work to get us where we are today,
uh-huh,
who we're really grateful to.
Yes. There's been lots of changes, haven't there? And at first, obviously, the festival company didn't exist. It was a development company.
So the Booktown company was the original organisation who had 10 years worth of funding for a development officer and then some additional administrative staff. And after 10 years, that funding came to an end. So in 2007, the Booktown company was wrapped up and the festival company was established as a charity to take forward the annual book festival.
Mm-hmm. And that had come out of the Booktown company, hadn't it? Because originally that was just there to support bookshops, move all books, trying to get people to come and open bookshops, I'm guessing, initially.
I think the concept was always that the two things would work hand in glove. So a festival would support booksellers who were coming to open businesses and be here all year round, and likewise having the name of Scotland's National Booktown and a town full of bookshops also supports the festival, because if you're bringing book lovers to the town for author events, then it also gives them other things to do while they're here and really immerse themselves in literature while they're here. And I'm really pleased to say that still seems to work, and it's great that so many visitors continue to do both.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So can you remember, because the first festivals were just over one weekend, weren't they?
That's right.
And I have, and you must have a memory of Julia Donaldson being here.
Julia Donaldson was certainly here for one of the early festivals.
Because I can remember she was doing a reading in what was then Box of Frogs, Bits of Wood.
That's right.
Which is now Briars and Gravers.
Yes.
And I can remember bringing my children along, and I can remember, I just have this very strong memory of her husband walking around the square, basically, with his guitar,
yeah,
to drum up an audience, which is just amazing. Because, in fact, today, Lou has just done a window in Foggy Tuttle Books with this huge Gruffalo standee in the window celebrating 25 years.
Absolutely.
And this is it's just extraordinary to think that what a phenomenon that book and Julia has subsequently become.
Absolutely.
And she was here at such an early stage.
That's right. And came back for several years. Yeah. I remember one of my former colleagues, Catherine, convincing her sister to dress up as the Gruffalo for one of our very early schools events, where there were, you know, 350 children in the festival marquee as the success of that book grew and grew. And again, with Julia and Malcolm on stage together with Faye dressed as the Gruffalo.
But it must have been quite difficult. I mean, I kind of have vague memories of those early festivals of, you know, coming through with the children. I guess oh, I've just, now I'm going to forget. I was just about to say his name and now it's gone out of my head. And my kids used to listen to it. He was a one-man band.
Mr. Boom.
Mr. Boom.
We're going to the moon with Mr. Boom.
Yes. Oh, my son just adored Mr. Boom. And so, when he came, I just thought, oh, this is amazing to actually see Mr. Boom. Oh, what happened to Mr. Boom? Anyway.
He still has a website, Jane. You can have a look and see what happened to Mr. Boom. I'm sure we've also still got a CD in the office too. I'll share it with you.
Yes, well, we had it on cassette. That's how long ago it is. We had Mr. Boom on cassette. But yeah, no, my son just loved him. And I remember him coming. Can you? Because, you would have been of an age. What? Can you remember any events? Did you go to any of the early...
So in the first year of the festival, when it was just over a weekend, there were speakers like Joan Lingard and Mari Hederwick. I still have one of the very first books that Mari signed for me. But actually, my job that year at the festival was with the Girl Guides, Jane, and there were four of us who, in our uniform, our responsibility was to hand out programmes on the street. So there are some rather embarrassing photographs that date back that far. But it just goes to show, actually, some of the things that happened for that year's festival still, are still important today. It's still important to distribute information like that to people who just happen upon the town and don't actually know that there's a festival, a festival going on. But I have some memories of sitting on the floor in the old courtroom, as it was referred to in the county buildings, pre-renovation, listening to both Mari Hederwick and Joan Lingard speak.
Yes.
So, yeah, quite amazing.
Aha. So did you have any ambition to come back, or was it that just something that happened? Because obviously, you went to high school locally and then went off to university.
Yeah.
Was there a... Did you think there might be a role for you, or was that more of a surprise?
It was more of a surprise. When I went off to university, I went away to study hospitality, and after 6 months decided that I absolutely hated it and that that I'd kind of done my stint in hospitality and would be quite happy to look at something else. And was quite lucky that my course leader said, you can change to any of the other courses in the business school, finish first year and then transfer for second year. So I transferred to events management, which was a course I'd looked at but couldn't find a course in Scotland at the time. Mm-hmm. When I was looking, although I didn't ever think that there would necessarily be a job back here with it. I knew I wanted to come back to Dumfries and Galloway. I've always been a home bird. And one of the really special things for me about Wigtown is the incredible community spirit. So despite that kind of desolation that I'm talking about during my childhood, that doesn't mean it was an unhappy place to grow up in any way, because there were always people going the extra mile to put on our community festival week, to run brownies and guides, to make sure that there were youth clubs and tennis clubs and badminton clubs and lots of things to do and run by, some really, really wonderful people who wanted to make the town the best that it could be for the people living here. So I was always drawn back by that community spirit. And when I came back and was looking for a job, I was working actually on a short-term job with the Chamber of Commerce, as was at the time. So there was a transnational project between Wigtown and Becherel, which is a book town in France. And at that time, the festival company was being set up and the Booktown company wrapped up. And the job for assistant to the director, as it was then, was being advertised. And that was the job that I got. So, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yes. Because was that when the director was still like a voluntary role? Yes, was that?
That's right.
When Finn McGrath was still director? Yeah, so you were assistant to...
Assistant to Finn, so there was myself and Catherine Campbell, who was the arts administrator, so kind of one and a half full-time equivalent staff. So she was full-time and I was 2.5 days a week to begin with.
Aha, good news. And obviously It's grown enormously from that initial weekend. Was that always the plan, or are you surprised at how it has grown? Because it must have been quite a risk to put a festival on when transport's such an issue, and not just for audiences, but for authors as well. In fact, I'm just going to tell the story of, and there's lots of these, I know, but in fact, I've forgotten the name of the author, thank goodness, conveniently forgotten the name. It wasn't the author's fault, but I can remember one event being delayed quite a bit because the author had arrived from Glasgow at Dumfries Station, got in a taxi and asked to be taken to the Wigtown Book Festival. And it was only when she was crossing the border, realised that something was wrong and said to the taxi driver, I know this festival is in Scotland. And this taxi driver was heading to Wigton in Cumbria. So I'm sure there's lots of stories like that.
There are lots of stories like that that I can't tell until I no longer work for a book festival, I suspect, Jane. But yes, I do remember that instance very well. And the same with, delayed planes, roadworks, tractors. There's always a challenge and a story to tell at the end of every festival.
Yes.
I think we're very lucky because people understand where we are. They're generally pretty accepting of that,
and it's become part of the charm. I think so.
Absolutely, and for some people it's difficult and it's frustrating because by the time the author arrives, actually you're booked into the next event and it clashes and so on. But you know, authors and the team of volunteers and the staff always try their best to make sure that the event happens as was planned. But I think you're right. Transport is a challenge, and it's a conversation that comes up every year. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we do this? How can we do this better? We're lucky that there are now kind of rideshare schemes that people can tap into, and some members of the audience who, over a long period of time, have got to know each other better, and again, they car share with each other. We often get asked by people who are coming to visit, how do I get from... I remember one instance where late at night I got an email from a man coming from Ireland who said, I've booked my accommodation in Wigtown, I've booked my tickets for several days worth of the festival, I've booked my ferry to come from Ireland. It looks to me like to get from the ferry I have to get a bus from Cairn Ryan to Stranraer and wait. A bus from Stranraer to Newton Stewart and wait. And then a bus from Newton Stewart to Wigtown. And overall, that journey, which should take 40 minutes at most by car, was going to take 4.5 hours. So eventually I said, I'm going to send a volunteer to pick you up at the ferry terminal. Because it's so important that when people come, they have a good experience. And that's the experience from start to finish. And that includes getting here and it not being a real schlep. And I guess all we can promise is that we will try our very best to make sure that when you're making that effort to come, that we'll make sure you have a great time when you get here.
And I suppose that has, the way it's developed and people coming for longer. So was it always the intention that it would become more than a weekend? Or
so before the festival company was established, it was already at 10 days. That was something that happened earlier than 2007. I can't tell you off the top of my head which year, which I'll kick myself for later, but it was already at 10 days. And the intention was originally to pick the September weekend, mm-hmm. which we hoped would bring people down from the central belt mm-hmm. to stay for a long weekend, and then to expand it so that it took in two weekends, and again to allow as much opportunity as possible for more people to come and experience the festival, for a greater footfall and a greater audience for speakers.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's amazing, really, the way it has changed and the town has changed. Has there been, obviously, originally when the bid was made, it very much came from the community. Did you find that probably the majority of booksellers were incomers? Was there ever any kind of conflict at all, or do you feel it was something that was embraced. There's always going to be tension in a community when something as radical as this changes.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, the shops are mainly bookshops.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. So initially the committee was made up of local people who tried as much as they possibly could to take the community along on the journey and get that community buy-in. I suspect it was really difficult at that point to imagine how becoming Booktown might change things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I would be lying to say that there were never any conflicts and people who maybe felt like Booktown happened to them rather than with them.
Yeah.
And that's something that we hope we try and work on each year by trying to involve the community, particularly in the festival, because we know it's an imposition that we close off the street, and we know it's an imposition when, you know, it's more difficult to park outside the co-op or things like that. But we hope that the value in knowing that there are additional jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So we did an economic impact assessment for the festival in 2019, which showed that it creates the equivalent of 57 full-time jobs in the area, and that it brings £4.2 million in economic benefit. So while there are frustrations for some people, and we try to be sympathetic towards that as well, and try to reduce the imposition as much as we possibly can, it's also really important for us to kind of look at that bigger picture and say, what would, for me, it's remembering back to what the town was like when I was a child, and my drive every day is, let's never go back there.
Yes.
And there's no question for me about the fact that Booktown status is something that's completely changed that. There are opportunities now for other businesses to open up, you know, and they would be welcome and are welcomed with open arms. And I think that, you know, we've got to embrace that and see what the next 25 years hold.
Yes, and just with, the involvement with children, because obviously the Children's Festival's always been a big part of it, and you've had a Young Persons Festival where, you know, you involved, I know, every year, a lot of young people in actually programming. So the festival does bring about opportunities for experience and learning, and I would imagine just, opens up horizons.
Yeah.
That without the Booktown, children probably wouldn't have had any expectation of jobs, careers, or even considered, you know, that this might be something that they could do. And just confidence. I mean, because I know that you always involve a local child to introduce an author, and they get to read the book beforehand. And that's an amazing thing. You know, I was just devoured books when I was a kid. But the thought of being able to meet an author would have just, you know, blown my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that remains really important for me, is that opportunity to give back. And for, yes, involving the children in introducing the authors, and my understanding is there's no other festival anywhere that does that, and so it feels really special, not just for the child but for the author too.
Yeah,
to get that sort of genuine, heartfelt introduction from one of their own, you know, from one of their readers, right through to offering kind of training and opportunities for young people to chair events with YA authors, and I love being able to kind of look back at some of the young people who've come through our various opportunities over the years and see what they're doing now. You know, we've got some who are working in children's publishing, and we've got some working for other book festivals. It's really reassuring to know that you are given those opportunities, that are given a platform and a step up for young people. And it doesn't have to be that they stay in Wigtown. It's wonderful to see them go out and make their mark on the world.
Yes, it gives them the CV, doesn't it?
That's right.
Those things, a genuine experience. You know, whereas, you know, I think I had paper round and worked in a grocer's shop, you know.
Yes.
They were my opportunities. So, you know, for young people here, if they want to, there is that chance to to learn, to have training, to be involved in something, then it is really exciting.
That's right. And to give validity to a career in the arts, because quite often people kind of poo-hoo that and say, well, you know,
yeah.
But it's so vital for, you know, for our social lives, for our mental health and well-being, for all sorts of things. So it's a real pleasure to watch them develop and grow.
And of course, it's also made a difference to the wider area, hasn't it? You have seen, because I've certainly seen the number of people who are creative generally in different ways. There are, you know, authors, illustrators that have been attracted to the region, to the area. But there's a lot of creative people generally that, and again, it may be that there always were, but there were fewer opportunities to show that creativity.
Yeah.
But yes, you've got potters and weavers and goodness knows what else, and workshops happening. And certainly that wasn't the case when I moved here.
We're so rich in that sort of talent. And I agree with you. It may have been that they were always there, but that they were always supplementing their income more heavily by doing something else. Where now there are much greater opportunities for being able to, you know, as you say, offer workshops, sell their products and so on. And I think that's an incredible thing, because it means that people are able to be truer to themselves.
Yes. So what's the biggest change, do you think? Is the one thing, is it the county buildings, or is it the building that the festival company's in?
Oh, gosh.
But that was one building I remember when I drove into the town that day and whenever it was, you know, just thinking, oh, my goodness, look at that. And, it, you know, because you see the architecture and the history and, the, you know, these wonderful pillars and architrave and everything.
Yeah.
And then these buildings were just, boarded up. Is there any one particular that is always...
I think that one is iconic for me and, you know, not a place that we'd ever necessarily thought we would end up with the festival company, but it was a building I walked past to go to school every day. And yes, the windows boarded up, the paint flaking off. I mean, it really was in such a state of disrepair. And you know, today it's not. It's had a building added at the back, which we now use as a venue for festival events and other events year round. And I think actually the whole town centre, I think for me has been the biggest change, because I just feel like that sense of pride has been reinstilled, and it's almost as if somebody's taken what in my mind was a black and white painting and added colour and brought it back to life. And it's really exciting to see it continue to develop and new businesses coming in and so on, which, you know, who would have thought that would be the case after so long? But it's wonderful that it is, and that people still want to come here and run their businesses.
Yes. I won't ask you if you've got a favourite event, because actually I'm guessing you probably during the festival don't see many events, if any.
I don't see very many. I've caught snippets of events over the years, and I think one of the ones that always sticks with me was Frank Gardner, who came to talk at the festival several years ago, and he told a story during his talk about, you know, obviously the experience that he had of being shot and being left wounded. His cameraman was killed, and he said, so, you know, my message to anybody is, don't sweat the small stuff. Although I still get really upset when somebody leaves the top off the milk. and that's that. I used to find myself getting, you know, really worked up and worried about all the things that were going to happen with the festival as it was approaching or while it was happening. And now I have a little Frank sitting on my shoulder that says, "Don't sweat the small stuff."
That's good. Now I'm going to put you on the spot.
Mm-mm.
In that I just had the Wigtown Primary School Book Club came into the shop today, and I was asked what was my favourite book, and what was my favourite author? Now, obviously, with children's books, there's just so many different age groups. So I said, well, you know, so I kind of said, well, picture books this and other books that. And so, yes, do you have, I mean, it may not be anybody who's ever, it may be somebody that, you know,
I have
been dead a long time.
And actually, I can answer it confidently because Rosie has just asked the same thing of our entire staff team in the office for World Book Day so that she can do a display. And I think my favourite book that I've read to date has to be The Nowhere Emporium by Ross McKenzie, which just transported me into a whole other world. And I was just gripped from the first page, and I was devastated to get to the end of the third book in the series and know that was indeed the end. So that would be my recommendation to anybody who's looking for a really gripping read.
A few times.
He has, yeah, absolutely.
Very good. And we're going to be looking at Valentine's Day, are there any love poems that you particularly like, or is poetry much? Do you read poetry much?
I don't read a lot of poetry. No, I have a poetry book beside my bed at the moment called Mothering, for obvious reasons, and that I have a toddler. But I'm not much of a poetry reader, and I'm not sure if I could. I'm not sure if I could give you a love poem off the top of my head, okay. Jane.
No, don't worry. Sorry, I put you on. Yes.
I could probably make you one up in my head quite quickly, but.
So what's just looking at the year ahead? We've got the guest programmer Lee Randall is returning again this year. I think everybody really enjoyed the festival that she put together last year.
That's right.
I think everybody was impressed, you know, talking as a bookseller, is her involvement actually in just coming and talking to each of us and getting us involved, mm-hmm. asking us what, you know, where we felt it should go. That was really a very positive thing. So Lee's coming back, but what else have you got? You've got World Book Day.
Yeah, World Book Day is coming up in March on the 7th, and we're hoping to encourage everybody in Wicktown to get on board with that and to dress up as their favourite book character for the day, so that we're literally bringing books to life here in Wicktown. And yeah, working towards this year's festival programme. So just shortly, the call out for authors to apply to be part of the Spotlight on D&G programme, which was a real success in 2023, will go out. So that invites local authors to pitch to come and bring their books midweek during the festival to the open book. And we're also in the midst of looking at sort of strong environmental theme as part of this year's programme. That's probably about as much as I'm allowed to give away at the moment.
Yes.
But
it's just, I think a lot of people probably don't realise just how long it takes.
That's right.
And in fact, you know, some authors, if you don't book them years in advance, you're unlikely to get them. You know, these are things that unless you're involved in the industry, you wouldn't necessarily know.
Absolutely.
You know, you'll always get people going, oh, well, I wish they could get this person and that person. But the difficulties of getting hold of some writers. And actually, it's an amazing achievement. You know, the calibre of writer that has come to Wicktown over the years is just extraordinary. Again, because it's a small town, it's, you know, all the issues to do with transport and everything else. But, you know, because inevitably, you know, a lot of authors are based either Edinburgh, Glasgow, or, you know, London, and tend to gravitate towards Chatham and, you know, Hay and things like that.
I think that's, again, where we're so lucky. And again, that community spirit really comes into play because we've got over 100 volunteers who support the festival. And yes, lots of people coming out of London and Glasgow and Edinburgh don't have cars, so they've got to come by public transport. So we have a team of volunteer drivers who last year covered over 11,000 miles to to bring authors to the festival and take them back to trains and airports, and inevitably competing or contending, should I say, with the fact that the trains go on strike or airplanes don't take off because there's a storm or all of those sorts of things. But we've got an incredible volunteer base who do everything from driving the authors to distributing programmes to venue hosting and stewarding and staffing the information point, that collectively they give more than 2,000 hours to support the festival, and it couldn't happen without them. And that's part of the feedback that we get from authors when they come, is that it feels like a really special place, and that they feel like part of the community while they're here, because all of these people are embracing them and making it a really special and memorable experience.
That's great. And you've got Big Dog, of course, which is held in Dumfries and in association with Mowbray.
That's right. So Big Dog is taking place from the 22nd until the 24th of March. And we've got an education day on Friday the 22nd, and then a variety of partners delivering events as part of the programme with us on the 23rd and the 24th. So Dumfries and Galloway Arts Festival, Mowbray, Pamis, and I'm sure I've forgotten some, my apologies. And again, a really great programme that includes people like Chase Strathy, Lauren Child, and lots of opportunities for families to come and get involved. And we hope that people will come from across the region and beyond to be part of that. So, yeah, the programme's due to launch online this week. So we'll have to.
Right.
Yeah.
Exciting. Well, it sounds like you're very busy.
Sometimes.
And of course, your life has changed hugely over the period that you've been involved in the festival. And this is it. You've got a wee one now to look after as well.
But what's lovely is that I get to try out all of the children's books on him and Jane. So we have some festival favourites already on our bookshelf, and he's not quite two yet. So I'm really lucky that he has taken to books like a duck to water and indulges mummy when she wants to read at least three bedtime stories.
Well, that's good. Well, thank you very much for joining me for this. Hopefully we can maybe get you back later in the year, or when Lee's here, I'm hoping maybe we can persuade Lee to come and give us her experience of having been involved in the festival for quite a number of years.
That's right, yes.
As a presenter and interviewer rather than programmer. But
I'm sure she'll be delighted.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of Booktown Blether.